Welcome to A Million Other Choices. Thank you for joining me. We discuss dark topics here, and sometimes things get hard to listen to. My focus is always on victims and their families and friends, which can be very hard to listen to, so please be advised of this. Ad-free episodes can be signed up for through Red Circle or Patreon, where you can also get access to full-length bonus content. You can make a one-time donation at Buy Me a Coffee. Disclaimer and sales pitch are done. Next up, legal. All sources are publicly available information, and I use a wide variety of sources to try to ensure accuracy, but I cannot confirm the accuracy of publicly reported information. If you would like a specific source or sources, please email me at amillionofthechoices@outlook.com and I will provide it to you. You can also email me there with case suggestions and just general comments. Okay, we are done. Let's get going with what you came here for today. So today I'm probably going to get some things wrong. There is a lot of names, and then there's name changes and dead names and stuff that, well, quite frankly, my generation kind of struggles with getting correct 100% of the time. Not that that's an excuse. I'm just here doing my best. There appears to be a bit of a disconnect between the victim and what they wanted for themselves in life and then kind of what is. From what I can piece together, which is actually not that easy, is that Ryan Zimmerman, who grew up in Mississippi but then moved for a time to Kentucky before eventually moving to Ohio, was born a biological male, but just before their death was going through some experimentation with their sexual identity and beginning to live life as a woman named Emma or M. Zimmerman. But it doesn't sound like any like medical transition had been taking place yet, such as like hormone therapy or anything like that. So when they passed away, of course, any physical evidence like DNA and whatnot came back as a male. Now, his family and the media and court documents as well refer to them as Ryan, he, him. But at times, the police and the people that knew him just before his death use Emma or M, and sometimes Ryan as well. So although his family uses he, him, Ryan, I have no idea if that was their preferred name and pronouns. And sadly, of course, he's not here to tell us. And although I really wish to respect the family, respecting Ryan or Emma is what would be the most important thing for me in this case. But I can't know what that is. So I'm going to go with respecting the family who was closest to him for the longest period of time. And I'm going to be using Ryan, he, him. And in 2015, Ryan was 21. As I mentioned, he had grown up in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, but the family had moved to Corbin, Kentucky when he was about 19, and he had moved with them there. So his family would be his dad, Warren, his mom, who I couldn't find a name for, an older brother, Randy, and then a younger brother, Raymond. And Raymond had been born with Down syndrome, and Ryan had completely taken him under his wing and like understood his needs. There is a third sibling in the mix somewhere, but they have remained outside of the media, so I don't know that person's identity. Ryan was very shy, but he was also very sweet. He had a really caring nature about him, but his shyness and his social awkwardness made him a bit of a target for bullies in school, which I'm sure didn't help his shyness. He filled his time with video games and a really strong interest in science, and he was just a good, kind, and decent sort of young man. But Ryan was also struggling with his sexual identity, which was something that his family wasn't really aware of. So he connected with people online with sort of similar struggles. And by the summer of 2015, he had started to research some hormone therapy and vocal coaching because it sounds like he was strongly considering making the transition to female. And although not officially starting the process, was posting ads on Craigslist personals to explore being seen as a female in a relationship. But because these were personal computer details, the family wasn't aware of his struggles or his decision and just saw him as their sweet and shy brother and son. In August of 2015, Ryan packed up a few belongings and moved to Columbus, telling his family that he just wanted to get away for a while. And being that Ryan was 21, he's an adult, his family supported him in that move. Although later, Ryan's older brother, Randy, reflected that in his last conversation with Ryan on September 27th of 2015, he had been a little bit vague, and Randy felt that he was maybe struggling with something at that time. There is some discrepancy in dates in that some reports say that Warren, who's Ryan's dad, reported him missing in October of 2015, but others say it was not until November 17th. And I don't know how odd it would be that Ryan wouldn't be in contact with his parents for 2 months or 1 month before they started to get concerned. I don't know enough about their relationship and their previous contact. I know that I have what I think both my daughter and I would call a close relationship, in that she can tell me pretty much anything, but I can probably go a month without hearing from her. And we actually live in the same city. Granted, when I text her and she doesn't reply for like 3 hours, I assume she's been murdered, but that is just me. Anyways, on November 17th, Warren got an impound notice on Ryan's car. The car had actually been registered in Warren's name, and the car had been found abandoned and didn't have a plate on it. But a few of Ryan's belongings were in the car, which is how they traced it back to contact Warren about it, that this car had been impounded. And like any parent would be, right away he's concerned, because why would Ryan not have contacted him that his car had been towed? I mean, adult kids can go weeks without talking to you, but when something goes wrong in their lives or they need money, they get in contact usually right away. Like, you can just trust me on that. And Warren wasn't able to get in contact with Ryan. So he made the trek from Kentucky to Columbus, Ohio, where Ryan had been living, to try and figure out what the situation was. The car had a full tank of gas in it, and the keys were sitting in the ignition when it was found. It was just parked on a residential street, but without any kind of plate on it. So it was ticketed and eventually towed. So Warren needed to do a little bit of his own detective work to try and figure out like what was going on here. So he kind of went door to door near where the car was found to see if anyone remembered seeing anything when it was left there. And one person actually did remember that the car had been dropped off by a tow truck, which is a little bit strange. Like, tow trucks normally pick up cars from residential areas, not drop them off there. And it was strange that a tow truck would just kind of dump a car on a street with no plates on it. And it wasn't very long after that, like later the same day, when the car was actually ticketed and towed, which also struck Warren and this man as a little bit strange, because it was almost like the car had been ordered to be dropped off randomly like that, and then somebody notified the city right away about it, like they wanted the car to get impounded. But unfortunately, this was kind of the only lead that they could really get about Ryan's disappearance. Ryan hadn't mentioned much about his living situation at the time. So at the time, the police kind of saw it as a case of wanting to be left alone, that he had sort of just decided to walk away from his life and start a fresh one. And this was really difficult for the family to swallow, seeing that Ryan had been so close and so very protective of his little brother, Raymond. But they started to wonder if maybe there was a lot more about Ryan than what they really knew. Now, so Ryan's missing persons case went cold before it even started. And the family slowly started to kind of accept that Ryan had either walked away or maybe decided not to continue living. He had been bullied in school. He was very like reclusively shy. So perhaps there was some depression there that they just didn't know about. But of course, questions just really lingered for them. Like, why? Like, what exactly had happened? And then on January 3rd, 2016, a woman decided to take her dog for a walk in Mercer County near Grand Lake St. Mary's, which is near Coldwater Creek, just off of 127. And her dog sniffed out something that she felt she probably should call in. So she made a call to 911.
Mercer County Sheriff's Office.
Yes, I may be just totally off my rocker, but I was just out walking my dog, and I came across some bones that look to me to be human. Maybe they're not. But I was wondering if I could send those pictures to you or email them to you.
Okay, where did you find this at, ma'am?
Right on Coldwater Creek. I was over walking my dog, you know, right where they're doing the construction.
When the police arrived at the scene, which was a somewhat frozen wooded area, they did find what was a human spine. But after searching the area and like the general area that animals will often carry off bones to, they couldn't find much more than that. And according to Detective Sergeant Megan Baker, quote, "We had a majority of the torso area, but we didn't have from the elbows or knees down, and we also didn't have the skull. There were apparent saw marks that you could tell this individual had been dismembered," end quote. As in, they could tell that the head had been severed from the body, but the skull itself was not anywhere near the torso bones. Like that, they did not have. State investigators handed over the torso bones that they could find and then handed them over to a team of forensic anthropologists to try to determine some general information about the victim, who was a male between 20 to 35 years old. And that was really all that they could really tell. Next, they were taken to the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation, where a DNA sample was extracted. But there was no match in the system either to like a missing person or a person in the criminal database. So at the time that Ryan had gone missing, investigators found no reason to take a DNA sample from any of the family members. Like familial DNA wasn't really being used back then to solve cases very often anyways. And they didn't have any DNA sample of Ryan's to put in the system, and no one really believed that he had been murdered, so why would they take a DNA sample for someone who obviously, in their opinion, didn't really want to be found? Well, in May of 2017, they reached out to ISO Forensics, which used a technique and a technology that I've actually never heard of. I found this really intriguing. They took water samples from the bones and then compared them to dirt samples from around the country to try and determine where this young man had come from. Well, reporters referred to it as water samples. It was actually something science-y called bone oxygen isotopes. But anyways, from that, they could build a map and put little red dots on the map of possible places to cross-reference missing persons cases from. And there was one tiny, tiny little dot was on Corbin, Kentucky, but it was so small that they had to actually contact ISO Forensics to make sure that it wasn't just like a printer error. It wasn't, but there hadn't been any recent missing persons reported from Corbin, Kentucky. So the case continued to sit cold and the torso skeleton unidentified for another two more years. Then in January of 2020, the case came to the attention of criminal intelligence analyst Jennifer Lester. She was going through some missing persons cases from Columbus and found that Ryan Zimmerman, who had been missing since September 27, 2015, fit the age, height, and the build of these mystery remains, as well as the timeline. Now, DNA had not been collected in this case, so there was nothing to compare to in the system. So Jennifer sent forensics to collect DNA from both Warren and Ryan's mom, and then a match was made. So now they had an identity. There was some renewed interest in trying to solve his murder. So Mercer County Sheriff Jeff Gray said at the time, quote, "We believe that this case is solvable. We want to bring closure to the parents," end quote. Detectives originally working the case of the remains felt that Ryan had been killed somewhere else, dismembered, and then his parts had been discarded in different areas. So Jennifer took up the task of analyzing Ryan's computer records from back home in Kentucky, as well as his phone records and social media activity prior to his disappearance, to try and figure out what he had done, where he had gone, and where he had moved to within Columbus. And the initial findings were that Ryan was contemplating a gender transition and had been looking into hormone therapy and voice modulating coaching. He had also started ordering some feminine clothing articles. And Ryan had put this ad on Craigslist expressing an interest in being a submissive female and building a relationship with like-minded people. He had used the name Emma or M in his ads and had been corresponding with someone using the screen name Laurel Emerson. And from there, the investigation was kind of off and running now that they had a little bit of something to work off of. Details from the messages between Ryan, going by Emma, and this Laurel were that he was making plans to move to Columbus to live with Laurel as a transgender woman. Now, it really didn't take a lot of sleuthing to figure out that this Laurel was actually a man named Corey Buzzard, who lived with his wife, Sarah, and another transgendered woman named Naria, whose real name is actually Jen Whitaker. Now, according to Jennifer, the investigator, looking at the messages, it was clear that Ryan was a little bit nervous about the move for more reasons than just that he was shy, introverted, and that this was his first time experience in this kind of thing. But also because, according to Jennifer, quote, Corey had warned him that Naria did not like other people to basically be out exploiting their sexualities. She felt that if you wanted to be a female, you needed to portray yourself as a female and not let anyone else know otherwise, end quote.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But DC politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products.
Now, Ryan had actually not begun the full transition to Emma yet and was just kind of dipping his toes into living life as a woman. So he was a little bit nervous about how this was all going to go down for him. Records discovered that a month after Ryan's remains or partial remains had been found, Corey and Sarah had actually divorced, and then Sarah had married Jen / Naria. They were also able to find that Sarah had, at the time, she had a Toyota Corolla that she had sold not long after all of this. So police were able to trace it to the person she had sold it to and then obtained a search warrant for it. And wouldn't you know, there were traces of blood in the trunk. In fact, so by getting a search warrant for the social media accounts that Ryan had used, they were able to pinpoint the address that the messages had originated from, which was a pretty good clue as to where Ryan had moved to when he came to Columbus. So they searched the foursome's old place in July of 2021, and they found some traces that turned up positive for blood, particularly in the bathroom and particularly in the bathtub, which is actually a very good place to dismember bodies, at least so I've heard. They tracked down Corey, but he was having nothing to do with police without a lawyer, so they couldn't even bring him in for questioning.
You're not in any trouble. I don't have an arrest warrant, nothing like that, Corey. Okay, we just want to talk with you because your name was brought up as a witness in a case I'm working. A homicide.
Homicide?
A homicide.
I have not. I don't recall witnessing any homicides.
Okay, we're just wanting to talk. That's it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I haven't lied to you at all, Corey. Okay? It's about Ryan.
I don't know who Ryan is.
Ryan lived with you for a while. Emma? He also went by Emma?
Okay.
He was a roommate for a while?
Okay.
Okay? That's what we're here to talk to you about.
Not without counsel.
Okay. Do you have an attorney on hand?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think they would meet us down there?
Can we make an appointment?
I'd rather get this done today.
I don't really think I have to work on your time.
Now, Corey did say that he was away the weekend that Ryan was last seen, and that Sarah did confirm that later, that she had actually driven him to a hotel that weekend to stay with some random woman. So on August 25th, 2021, they went to the house that Jen and Sarah were now living in with Sarah's mom. And they took Sarah in under the ruse of there was a warrant out for a theft charge or something from Ohio. So it doesn't sound like at this time Sarah and Jen were living in Ohio anymore and had moved to a different state, but I'm not sure which one. But it was Detectives Megan Baker and Rick Ward who were from Ohio, and they had been working Ryan's case, and they came out to talk to her. And now in this interview, Megan and Rick start by just kind of asking how Sarah knew Ryan, whom she, of course, knew as Emma. So this is how she remembers the whole Ryan, Emma coming to live with them. Her and Corey were married. They were in an open relationship. And Corey wanted a transgender woman to come and live there as his side chick, or whatever. Meanwhile, Sarah moved Jen in as her side person. But when Ryan got there, he wasn't exactly what Corey had expected. He was painfully shy and kind of reclusive, spent a lot of time in his room, and was also just at the early stages of transitioning. So I guess wasn't trans enough or whatever. So he wanted Ryan to leave, and he left it to Sarah to tell him to leave. And apparently he made plans to leave on September 25th. He'd left in someone else's car, and she figured he'd be back later for his car, but he never returned for it. Now, in this interview, Sarah tells them that she kind of took his car out one day and drove it to a gas station, but she couldn't get it started again, so she had to have it towed back to the house, and that Jen was with her at the time.
Had you ever driven it?
Yes.
Okay, to the store or something, or when did you drive it?
To a gas station. I couldn't get it to start again, so I had to call a tow company to bring it back.
Now, she thought that Ryan had returned sometime later and then took the car, and then that's why it was now gone. So at the same time, a couple of other officers from Ohio go back to the house to talk to Jen. Now, she's not very chatty about anything, but she says that she never rode in Ryan's car ever.
What kind of car did he have? Did you ever ride in the car?
Yeah.
You were never in his car? Okay.
And she confirms that she got the feeling that Corey regretted his decision for him to move in with them because of this reclusiveness of his personality, but also added this little tidbit about her own feelings, that Jen herself was transgendered, and she knew that Corey wanted to have a relationship that consisted of a man, a woman, and a trans woman. And Jen said that she didn't want any part of that, which is why they had brought Ryan into the mix in the first place. Now, back in the interview with Sarah, though, she was blabbing on that she never wanted Ryan there in the first place, and that bringing him in had been kind of a final straw for her in her marriage.
Ryan was just kind of the last straw for me.
Tell me more about that. Why was he the last straw?
That was probably one of the biggest arguments that we had, to make him that third person. But I obviously didn't agree with that, and the entire time it made me feel like I wasn't good enough.
So after getting this information from Sarah, they reveal that there are some inconsistencies in her and Jen's story. So Sarah acts like she had no idea that Ryan was dead. So they tell her, we found Ryan's DNA in your car and a bunch of blood in your old apartment. So what's up with all of that? And that's when she kind of hints at this isn't comfortable anymore and maybe she would like to talk to someone, like probably a lawyer maybe.
I'm not comfortable talking about
this. I mean, we have a young...
Was it an accident?
Yeah.
I don't know what was an accident.
With Ryan.
I didn't even know that he was dead.
Sarah, come on.
Is there someone that I can talk to?
Well, you can talk to us.
Meanwhile, again, back with Jen, they tell her that Ryan is dead and has been partially recovered. And she also does the whole, wait, what, whoa thing. But she's just kind of no-weighing her way through this conversation.
We're trying to find Emma, and we were somewhat successful in that.
Okay. Wait, what? Somewhat?
Mm-hmm.
What leads?
That's what we need you to fill in the gaps, because whatever happened to Emma happened in the apartment where you guys stayed at, and we've recovered evidence from the apartment. We recovered evidence from Sarah's car.
Right.
Blood.
Wait, whoa, what?
Mm-hmm. Blood from the trunk of the car. Blood from the apartment by the bathtub, where in part of Emma's body was discovered it was dismembered.
So the police try again to talk to Sarah before she actually calls a lawyer instead of hinting that she just wants one, by showing her the Google searches on her account and asking for an explanation on them. And there were things like she had searched jugular vein and how to start a Ford Focus. And after that, she spills all the beans. Well, at least the beans, according to her first version of these beans. And yes, I'm going to tell you the beans. But first, back with Jen. One of the officers with Jen gets a call from, I think it was Rick, saying, you know, Sarah has spilled it and Jen helped her with the murder and all this stuff. So they tell Jen this bit and she's like, Sarah's a liar, blah, blah, blah. So they're getting nowhere with Jen / Naria. So after wrapping things up with Sarah, who is busy getting booked on charges of tampering with evidence, grand theft auto, abuse of a corpse, and gross abuse of a corpse, which I didn't realize there was a difference between regularly and grossly abusing a corpse. Oh, and of course, murder. Charges she was hoping that she'd get bail for. Anyways, Rick heads over to Sarah's mom's place where Jen is being interviewed and tells her, look, she's under arrest for helping dismember a corpse. And she's kind of like unbelieving about the whole thing. And she's like, really? She said that like I helped? And he's like, yeah, so maybe you should tell us your version. And what's interesting about this interview now that Rick is there, well, it turns out there's a couple of interesting things about this interview. So Jen's been sitting in this house talking to the other officers this whole time with her purse on her lap, which is kind of weird because usually suspects are questioned after being searched and like their stuff gets taken away from them. But anyways, Rick notices this and he says, like, what's in your purse? And she gives an answer kind of like, oh, that's my emotional support purse. Only she doesn't actually use those words. She says it's just to make me comfortable and calm. So same, as far as I'm concerned. So they accept that answer and then they move on to telling her all of the evidence that they have, the blood and the DNA and the car and the bathroom, etc., and how the evidence is matching up with Sarah's story. And they tell her she's going to be placed under arrest. And Jen reaches into her purse, pulls out a handgun, and shoots herself in the head right there in front of them. So that kind of ended that interview. Now, later, Sarah was brought in for questioning again, and she gave like a pretty different version of the story, one which may or may not be closer to the truth. It's hard to know because this time, of course, she says it's all Jen's idea, and well, she's dead, so that can be a little bit convenient. So this is how the story goes. Ryan moved in and did start a relationship with Corey. Meanwhile, Sarah was having her own relationship with Jen, but Corey didn't want Ryan around anymore and asked him to leave, and then conveniently leaves for the weekend. So, because, you know, now he doesn't have to have any confrontation with them. Well, Ryan went to Sarah pleading for him to be able to stay a little bit longer. I mean, he really had nowhere to go and not exactly a very reliable car to get him anywhere. But Sarah said, no, Corey brought you here, not me, so you have to go. And then she told Jen that he had asked for more time. And that is when apparently Jen came up with a plan to kill Ryan instead of just like letting him just leave, which is why the motive, I think, just boggles me here. So for some reason, I guess because Jen just didn't like Ryan for not being a full trans woman or something, she comes up with this plan to kill him, even though Sarah admitted that Ryan, in her mind, had ruined her marriage. But she went through with Jen's plan because, well, she loved her so much that she was afraid of losing her. I mean, do you see what I mean about the motive? Like, what did Ryan do to anyone here? Anyways, Sarah said she didn't really believe Jen at first and thought she was just joking. But when she saw her starting to gather some things like trash bags and saws and stuff, it was starting to get a little bit real. Regardless of whose idea it was and why, Sarah accosted Ryan coming out of the bathroom and put him in a chokehold and got him on the ground. Jen then came with this rag of bleach and vinegar on it and suffocated him. The plan was to dismember him into small pieces and disperse him around wooded areas in Ohio. But after loading some of him into this Tupperware bin and putting it into the trunk of Ryan's car, where they planned on abandoning it and then taking a Greyhound bus back home, the darn car, of course, wouldn't start again, so they had to have it towed with Ryan still in the trunk. And then they came back and took the bin out of the trunk of Ryan's car and then put it into Sarah's car, where they then dumped his torso in the park where it was eventually found. Now for his hands, head, and feet.
She started to get intestinal cramps, so she went to lie down and said I had to take over. So I put the hands in one bag, or no, the hands and the feet she told me to put in a bag, and then she also put it in the freezer for later because she said those would be the two big identifying factors and she would have to deal with them separately. So I removed the forearms and the calves at the joints. And it was slow, exhausting work. And then she took care of the hands and feet while I was at work and Corey was at school. She did something to make it easy to pick the pieces apart and store that in a bag. And the head, she got this soup pot and made some kind of lye mixture and put the head in it, partially because it was kind of a trophy for her, but also because she didn't know the best way to dispose of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to carry, or so she put it in the soup bin, put that in a bag, or several bags, put the pieces of the hands and feet also in the bag, and then kept bagging it up, and we put it in the shed for the time being. And every time we moved, it would have to come with us. The head in the freezer didn't draw any attention because she had packed like vegetables and stuff in front of it, so it didn't look like it was anything.
And then they both told Corey that Ryan had just simply left instead of his head being in the freezer, actually, behind a bunch of frozen peas and corn while they waited for what they were going to do with it. Now, in the official version of the why, well, apparently, and this is according to Sarah, Jen hated Ryan because if you're going to transition, you have to commit to it and you have to try to blend in. Like, there's no waffling allowed. Gender is not fluid in Jen's world.
The thing she said was along the lines of, someone like that doesn't deserve to be out in the world to ruin someone else's life. So I think in some perverse way, it was her idea that I don't want to go so far as to say she was dealing out justice, but she just felt very strongly that he didn't deserve to be out there. She said that if you want to transition, your goal is to just fit in, to
And that's what she tried to do. She didn't point out anything. She tried to be as feminine as possible because that's what she wanted to be, was a woman. And so with people like Ryan, who say that they're transitioning but are not really making the effort, really bothered her. She more commonly said things like, he's a disgusting human being, or the world would be better off without him. So that's why the fact that Ryan wanted to but still looked and acted male just really got under her skin.
She didn't think that he belonged to be in the world because of it. Anyways, Sarah pled guilty to aggravated murder in exchange for all of the gross abuse and other charges to be dropped. And she was given life in prison with parole after 30 years. At her sentencing, she said, quote, "Not a day goes by that I do not wish for a chance to take it all back. I accept responsibility in the role that I played in Ryan's death, and I will live every day for the rest of my life attempting to redeem myself through positive actions and deeds," end quote. Now, Megan Baker, who's the detective, said, "He didn't deserve to go through what he did. He was only an individual who was trying to find himself basically in his place in the world. At least he gets to be home with his family. They know what happened, that the person will stay in jail for a long time." Ryan's brother Randy told the media, quote, "Someone obviously took advantage of his heart, but through all of this, I want to celebrate him. He searched out to people he didn't even know. He was just searching for someone to fill a void inside of him. I want people to think about that. Maybe teach your kids to be sweet." He wants people to use his brother's story to remember to show kindness because, quote, "You never know how close they are or how much they are on the brink of making a crazy move that they'll maybe regret," end quote. So with that, please go forth and please be kind to each other. That was the horrible and senseless murder of Ryan Zimmerman. And as always, I'm going to be back again next week. In the meantime, do all your things. You can sign up on the exclusive feed on redcircle.com. Also on Patreon. I do have some merch that is available. It's through Spreadshop. If you just go on there and then search a million other choices, you can look for, there's some designs, and then you can basically put them on, I guess, anything you really want to, from t-shirts, hoodies to, I don't know, water bottles, the normal stuff. So you can check that out. Continue to do your rate reviews. You can comment on the video, subscribe, follow the show, all that good stuff. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.